I'm delighted to welcome Jim Davison to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
All right, thank you.
Excellent. Now, you have seemed to stop working and you're going to be off on tour, but before we talk about your summer frolics, I'm just going to take you back to the winter season, because I remember seeing you in Panto at the London Palladium, along with Windsor Davis and Victor Spinetti in Dick Whittington. And what with it being 100 years of the Palladium, tell us, how did you feel about being part of the history of that iconic theatre?
Well, it was a long while ago. It was 1980 when I did that panto, so we're all showing our age a little bit. But it was nice to go there, and I was there for 20 weeks at top of the bill. It, you know, you'd think it would be the beginning of great stardom, and to an extent it was. And I got put firmly back on my feet when an American producer come over and said to Louis Benjamin, who ran the Palladium at the time, "Is he a very big star here?" And he said, "Who?" He said, "Dick Whittington." So he thought that I was Dick Whittington, for real.
You became the part.
That was it. I did my audition for New Faces there as well. Not for New Faces. I did my audition there for The Gang Show in 1966.
Ah, so it holds good memories for you there.
Yeah, it does. The Palladium's a wonderful theatre. It's a nice, cosy theatre. It's big, and it is lovely. It is one of the nicest theatres in the world.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? And top of the bill, you can't get better than that, can you?
No, you can't.
Last year, though, you were voted amongst the top 10 of favourite British comedians in a Times national poll. Do you think fans have always been loyal, as they know you're always going to give them a no-holds-barred humour?
I think fans to anybody are loyal. I was speaking to Jimmy Carr about this. I said, the people that come and see you, what age group are they? He said, well, between 18 and sort of 30 mainly. I said, well, they'll stay with you until they're 55 and 70. As you get older, your fans grow older with you, allowing the new younger people to find their own little niche in comedy or football or pop singing or whatever it is. I think your fans always stay with you. The difference is, as your fans get older, they get more bills and they get more... responsibility, so they tend not to go out and party and go to see as many concerts as you do when you have that, when you're 24 to 26 years of age.
This is true, but you still need a bit of light relief, a bit of entertainment, which you provide. Now, of course, we're told the new show promises to be near the knuckle, outrageous, politically incorrect and shocking. Do you think audiences appreciate the fact that you choose to bring up subjects that perhaps they wouldn't dare to?
Well, yeah, I don't know if there is a near to the knuckle anymore. If you switch on the television now, it's quite rude, you know, especially the BBC, for some reason, has decided to become extremely filthy, but then said I was too rude for it. It's quite amazing, but I've always been an adult entertainer, and that's what I do. I talk about things that make people laugh. I don't go out my way to shock people, only, you know, for a laugh. And funnily enough, I don't do the things on stage that I'm perceived to do. You know, I don't particularly see myself as racist or homophobic, although I do take on those subjects and rather ridicule the accusing people rather than the people who actually do believe that, you know.
Yes, well, I mean, why do you think comedians get away with saying things that others can't say in public?
Well, because they're funny.
That's true.
Well, comedians can always say, "I didn't mean it." But, I mean, that is the crux of the big issue. Should a comedian have a responsibility to say some of the things he does on stage? You know, I've seen some of these, what one would call the comedy circuit comedians, young guys in the comedy store, saying things that are absolutely repugnant and awful and terrible. And they seem to be able to get away with it because they're young university types who say, "I was saying it with irony." There you go. Well, someone's always the butt of the joke, really.
Mm.
And in all comedy, and I like comedy to be cutting edge. I liked Ben Elton. I didn't think he was a particularly good comedian, but he did take that way of knocking, you know, having a go at Margaret Thatcher and the royal family, but then stays down at Highgrove with the Prince of Wales. It's quite odd.
Yes, it's full of contradictions, isn't it, comedy?
Well, I think on stage you've got to stand up and believe. I have a great mate called Bobby Davro, and I said, "Bob, your trouble is," and he's very, 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 very funny. He gets standing ovations every night. He's just superb. I said, "But people don't know where you're coming from. You don't really stand for anything. You're just..." What Bobby stands for is having a good laugh, and maybe there's a lot to learn from that. But I actually go on. People know what I stand for. Well, they do when they come and see me. I leave them in no doubt what I'm all about. It's when they don't come and see me and they have this silly perception of me that's a bit worrying.
Yes, that's right. You have to come and see somebody in person, but you've got to stand for something. It's better than being wishy-washy, isn't it?
I think so, really, yeah, be it left-wing or right. I think extremes are quite funny, as long as you don't incite people to say awful things and do awful things. But you've got to remember, in this country, where my fans are concerned, I wish I had a pound for every time someone stopped me and said, why aren't you back on the television? These young guys aren't funny. You know, and that's what happens. I think because the young guys give themselves so many barriers, and they give themselves such narrow parameters of comedy. They can't do this, they won't do that. And they all say, we won't do anything we haven't written ourselves. Well, of course, they all lie about that. But why give yourself a set of rules? Just make people laugh and brighten their day up.
Absolutely. It's more you can want from comedy, isn't it, really? But I guess times sort of change in that respect. But it's very strange. But, I mean, talking about television, a little aside, really. But, I mean, you were essential television watching, like Big Break and Generation Game.
Yeah.
It must have been fun. Can you cite any funny stories with troublesome contestants?
No, not really. It was fun. But I was speaking to young Deck the other day. And he was, they tried to take on a programme similar to the Generation Game. And I was amazed that talking to him, that they had the same problems as I did, where that unfortunately the television people who make television programmes don't quite know how to make them, you know, they don't see eye to eye with the performer a great deal. If you look at Britain's Got Talent, there's very little of stage performance there, especially in the auditions. It's a big TV programme with thousands of dancers and lights and cameras, and I don't think that's what the programme should be about. There was always a problem for comedy that the director had put too many cameras on it and keep cutting away from shots. So it was a bit confusing, and it just annoyed me a lot.
Yes.
And it annoys performers to this day. They can't quite understand why the director seems to see a different television programme to the one they want to make.
Yes, yeah, got a very different vision going on there, haven't they? It's
most
confusing.
I did, to tell you the truth. It drove me mad. I enjoyed the money.
Yes.
I mean, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I got so fed up of walking down the stairs and the camera's in the wrong place.
No.
The film person didn't think that mattered.
No, it's about the whole...
Oh, he's difficult.
You're going to become a diva.
Well, I think divas just... That's another thing, you know. Divas know what they want and they know what they need to perform. And someone said, yeah, so she needs that kind of mic. Yeah, right.
That's right, yeah, but when you've been on the Palladium stage, you've got a lot of professionals around you and you get used to that professionalism, don't you? And that's what you want.
Well, if you normally have your own people working with you, your own sound crew and lighting crew, they do exactly what you want and you rehearse for it. The trouble is when you go to a TV studio and do something, you know, you can't rely on the sound or the lights because, you know, people aren't that good.
That's the thing, isn't it? But of course, many of our listeners know that you've been involved in, you know, entertaining the troops in conflict zones. But you actually awarded an OBE in 2001 for your services to entertainment and charity.
Yeah.
How did you first get involved in entertaining the troops, and what does it mean to you?
I got involved with the troops back in 1975 when they were in Northern Ireland, and I was invited to go over there and do some gigs. And I got paid £75 for a weekend's work, five shows. Very nice too. And I got to quite like the young troops. I didn't know much about politics. I certainly wasn't very pleased that they were in Northern Ireland. You know, a bit too close to home, and the, you know, the people were too similar to us. I couldn't get my head round all that. I think when the Falklands War broke out and we were actually fighting people that we should have been fighting, in my opinion, I decided that whatever I'd do for the troops in future, I wouldn't charge any money. And eventually, 11 years ago, I formed the British Forces Foundation to try and encourage other entertainers to entertain the troops without it coming out of the government's funds or out of the troops' welfare funds, and it's been very successful.
Well done. That's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, you're chairman of that organisation.
No, I stood down as chairman.
Yeah.
I let someone else have a go. I'm founder now. That's even more important. I'm the sort of Baden Powell.
Oh, fantastic.
Founder.
That's brilliant. I mean, I understand you've been to Iraq three times to support our British soldiers. What sort of reception did you get?
What, in Iraq?
Mm.
Oh, they're all right. They're all bored to death out there. So, you know, you just brighten up their day. It gives them something else to look forward to. In Afghanistan, it's a little different because when we were there, they were working very, very hard. Catherine Jenkins and I, the first time we went with one lot of commando groups, they sort of tabbed in about 10 miles to come and watch the show and then went back out into the desert. They were absolutely exhausted, covered in dust, and all we could do to cheer them up a bit.
Absolutely.
They wouldn't even have a beer.
I mean, you tackle virtually every forbidden subject on tour, but I guess the soldiers, having seen so much, they're not so easily shocked.
No, they're not shocked at all. You have to be funny with them. That's the problem.
Yeah. You're there to entertain, aren't you, after all? And they must really enjoy it.
Yeah, and also to give a message from the public to them, in a way, to say, look, you know, everyone's thinking of you. And we, you know, I get that great pleasure to take the message from the people to the troops, if you like.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great service, I've got to say.
Well, and it's no good standing there getting paid £10,000 a day to go to Afghanistan to tell people jokes and say they're doing a great job. Well, I think that's a bit two-faced, isn't it? So I do it for nothing, and so do all my mates, you know, Bobby, Jimmy Carr, and other guys, Status Quo, everybody, you know, seems to want to do things for the troops now. I think Help for Heroes raised people's awareness quite a lot. You know, and years ago when I asked Jack D and his management and all those people if they do anything for the troops and management, Addison Creswell said, we don't do anything for the armed forces, thank you. And now it was good to see them all at Twickenham joining in that TV programme supporting the armed forces. So, you know, people's attitude changed, and I'm pleased with it.
That's brilliant. That's a really
that's
great thing.
That's a non-cynical view, anyway.
No, well, that's the best view to have, really, isn't it? And it's tremendous work, and, you know, it's a great thing that you support there. But, I mean, legions of fans love your humour, and indeed those coming to Woking on Sunday the 12th and subsequent theatres will know it's strictly an adult show. And I don't want to spoil the fun, and I don't want to turn the air blue on radio, but what can audiences look forward to?
Well, first of all, I've got a really good support act as well, a big 6'6", handsome black guy called Matt Blaze. He does the first half, because I can't bear rotten support acts. So we have a good old laugh, and then I just go on and talk about whatever's in my head at the time. So I really can't say what they're going to look forward to. There'll be some good and trusted favourites to talk about the difference between men and women and the fun that can be had in the bedroom. And that'll be it, just pure, you know, good stand-up comedy with no rules, really.
Sounds a great night to me. And,
yeah, and I haven't played Woking Theatre. I don't think I've ever done a stand-up at Woking Theatre, maybe once. So it'd be nice to go back there.
Absolutely. Well, Woking crowd will be in for a treat on the 12th. So it sounds a great show.
Thanks.
And we wish you all the best with the tour as well.
All right.
So thanks very much,
thanks,
Jim.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And that was Jim Davidson. And do you join him on his tour for his Seaside Frolics? Brooklyn's Radio.